You join me with Geeta Sehgal just before she goes on stage here at the Library Theatre in Manchester, armed only with a controversial thesis and ready, I hope, to face our band of hand-picked hecklers. So, Geeta, tell us, what is your thesis tonight?
I'm going to be arguing that the government's strategy for dealing with Islamist violence is actually pandering to fundamentalists.
Well, that sounds suitably controversial for this programme, but how are you going to claim that?
Well, some of the people here tonight are the key allies of the government in the war on terror, and they're involved with institutions and networks that are themselves fundamentalists. So I don't think that if you're fighting fundamentalist violence, you should actually be allying with fundamentalists to do that.
Now, of course, the sort of groups that the government does sit round the table with are, for example, groups like the Muslim Council of Britain, the Islamic Society of Britain, people indeed like Tariq Ramadan, who's one of the hecklers tonight. Are you saying that these people are extremists?
I believe that they are fundamentalists, and I will explain what I think fundamentalism is. The Muslim Council of Britain is linked to an organization, a political party called the Jamaat-e-Islami, which is active all over South Asia. And Tariq Ramadan has been very closely associated with Muslim Brotherhood, which is a movement across the Middle East, now also active in Europe and Britain as well. And all these groups have advocated or been involved with extremist violence.
But you're not saying that these individuals who are going to be heckling tonight are somehow linked to terrorism, are you?
I certainly don't believe that they're the groups that are planting bombs. In fact, I think they'll be singularly useless at trying to catch those who are planting bombs. But I do believe that they are linked to other forms of violence in South Asia and the Middle East.
All your opponents tonight are Muslims, and you're not a Muslim, so you're not worried then that people might just think this is some kind of anti-Muslim campaign?
That's right, I'm not a Muslim. I'm from a Hindu background, but I'm an atheist. And I'm secular, and I don't think secularism is something that's anti-religion. I think secularism is a principle that I work with in two groups. One is called Women Against Fundamentalisms, and the other is called Awaaz South Asia Watch, which both stand for secularism and against religious hatred. And in Awaaz, for instance, we've campaigned for the last several years against violence committed in India by the Hindu right against Muslims. So we work against fundamentalism in all religions.
Okay, well, you know the rules. It's one against five. Do you think you can cope?
Well, I'll have to, won't I?
Hello and welcome to the Library Theatre in Manchester for this edition of Hecklers. My name is Mark Easton, chairing this debate, co-hosted tonight by the Manchester Council for Community Relations, an umbrella organisation of local groups which promotes equality and good relations in the city. They are, nevertheless, no strangers to provocative argument. Last year, they played host to the chair of the Commission for Racial Equality, Trevor Phillips, when he rather controversially claimed that in Britain we are sleepwalking our way into segregation. I don't think he was heckled. On this occasion, we encourage it. I call this event a debate, but in truth, it is not the usual balanced affair. It's actually five against one. And the brave one is Geeta Sehgal, who is speaking on behalf of two groups, Women Against Fundamentalisms and Awaaz South Asia Watch. Now, Geeta gets about half an hour in all to argue her point that the government's strategy for defusing Islamist violence is pandering to fundamentalists. That's her argument. But it's not an uninterrupted half an hour. Up against her are hecklers. Five people with equally strong but opposing views. Your job, hecklers, is to intervene and object when Geeta says something you disagree with. So, panel, if you could first introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm Tamina Salim. I'm from the Islamic Society of Britain.
I'm Tariq Ramadan from St. Anthony's College, Oxford University.
Nazir Ahmed from the House of Lords.
I'm Mozan Beg, former detainee of Guantanamo Bay.
Dawood Abdullah, Muslim Council of Britain.
Well, thank you, hecklers. Now, I am the referee in this contest, which means I get a bell. There it is. And when I next ring it, Geeta can start making her case. She gets two uninterrupted minutes at the start, and I'm going to give her a couple more protected sessions as she unveils her argument. But at the end of those 2 minutes, I will ring my bell again and unleash the hecklers. Now, this being the BBC, we expect the hecklers to raise their hand politely when they wish to challenge. And Geeta, we expect you graciously to allow the interventions to be made. At the end, we will be taking some comments from the audience here in Manchester. But for now, hecklers, Geeta, are you all ready? Let's go.
I am faced tonight with a distinguished panel of the British government's key allies in the fight against terrorism, as well as one of their most notable victims in the war on terror, Muazzam Beg, the former detainee of Guantanamo Bay. As someone who has opposed religious hatred and violence and condemned terrorism, that prospect should fill me with pleasure, for are we not engaged in the same struggle? But it doesn't, for the simple reason that the government's key allies are in fact engaged in movements of religious hatred, which some would argue are forms of terrorism. They are in fact representatives of some of the most dangerous movements of our time. They are either fundamentalists engaged in the political promotion of Islam, or they are their supporters. The take-me-to-your-leader approach served the empire well, but it built neither democracy, accountability, nor secular values. That surely is the task that faces all of us as British citizens today, and it is a task in which the government is spectacularly failing. In fact, its solutions are part of the problem. You might feel slightly uneasy hearing me say that the government's partners in the war against terrorism, groups like the Muslim Council of Britain, Islamic thinkers like Professor Tariq Ramadan, are fundamentalists. You're probably used to hearing them described as moderates. So why do I call them fundamentalists? On one issue, I would not disagree with their claims. They are, in fact, reformers, not traditionalists. Their movements were born in the 20th century and owe much to the very worst that Western values have produced, namely fascism and its aim of total control. Like other fascists, such politicians, and I regard them as politicians, tell the big lie with confidence, telling their audiences that practices that have varied hugely by place, class, and region must be replaced by a single way of being, of worshipping, of dress, one that is imposed by divine authority. For example, they tell women that wearing the headscarf is a religious obligation. And Tariq Ramadan claims that punishments such as the stoning of women for adultery can't be condemned entirely because they're divinely ordained. Women Against Fundamentalisms identify the control of the minds and bodies of women at being at the heart of fundamentalist political movements. In this way... And
okay, there's your 2 minutes up. Hecklers, you're free to go.
Dawood Abdullah.
Yes. If the groups you claim are dangerous represent the majority of Muslims in their respective countries, how can you, as a Democrat, exclude them from the political process?
I'm not arguing that they should be excluded from the political process. I think you should listen very carefully to what I'm arguing. I'm not arguing that governments shouldn't talk to them. What I'm arguing is that they've been made key allies in their strategy, nor do I accept that they're majorities in their countries. In Pakistan, the Jamaat-e-Islami is now in a coalition with two
state administrations. Who won the elections in Palestine? Who won the elections in Egypt?
Hamas.
In Algeria, in Turkey?
Hamas won the elections in Palestine. That's not disputed at all.
I just want to go back on one point, which is confusing to people like me. Jamaat-e-Islami, it's based out in Pakistan. It has its roots in South
Asia.
And
in Bangladesh and India.
Can you just explain as clearly as you can to what extent Jamaat-e-Islami is relevant in the conversation of how the British government deals with Muslims here?
Well, the Jamaat-e-Islami is a group that was born in India initially and exists still across South Asia. It's in the ruling coalition in Bangladesh and it's in two coalitions now in Pakistan. Most of its existence, it has thrived with the support of the military in Pakistan. It's had actually very little support from the Pakistani people. And in Pakistan, it's recognized as a political grouping and a very violent political grouping.
Are you actually saying that the Muslim Council of Britain, with whom the government has close contacts, is linked to that organization?
They are clearly linked to the Jamaat-e-Islami, and there's a whole network of groups which do not declare themselves as Jamaati organizations.
It is up to the individual to define himself.
Yes, but the groups define themselves by their policies, attacks on other Muslims and on other minorities. The point about the Jamaat-e-Islami and groups like the Muslim Brotherhood, to which Tariq Ramadan is connected, I'm sure he's going to dispute that with me in a moment, are that they are not transparent, accountable groups.
Take another headshot.
Lord Ahmed.
I'm delighted that you didn't include House of Lords as a fundamentalist. I wanted to ask you, you say that Islamist violence, apart from 7/7, which all reports have said that it had nothing to do with Islam but more to do with Iraq and the foreign policy, could you name me two or three different examples where you may have seen so-called Islamists beating people up, burning buildings down, or smashing any windows.
Yes, exactly that. I'm glad you said that, because last weekend I attended a forum around the Bangladesh elections, and there was deep fear across a whole range of religious minorities, Christians, Ahmadi Muslims, Hindus, tribal groups, of the violence that is being perpetrated in advance of the elections. And that violence is carried out by Islamist groups, and it is defended and supported by MPs of the Jamaat-e-Islami in the Bangladesh Parliament. Tariq Ramadan.
Thank you. The problem with debating with you is that you are totally misrepresenting the viewpoints of the other. So it's easy to say, you think this, and this is why I'm against you. First, the Muslim Brotherhood organization, even in Egypt, said, I'm not one of them. And then I'm telling you, I'm not. So if you decide for me that I am one of them, because my grandfather is the founder, it's up to you. But it's not a point. Second, you said about corporal punishment and stoning, for example, something I never said. I said that we have text about this in the scriptural sources, in the Quran and in the Sunnah. But what I'm saying is that the conditions are not there, so we cannot implement them. And this is why I ask all the Muslim government to stop this, because what we are doing now is to target this against the poor and the women. So you misrepresent my point. Third one, yes, 99% of the Muslim scholars are saying that the headscarf is an obligation and an Islamic prescription. The second part of the sentence is this: it's against Islam to impose onto a woman to wear the headscarf. What's wrong with that?
I accept that anybody has a right to wear anything they want. That is not the issue.
So that you agree with me then?
That anybody has a right to wear anything they want.
No, this is what
the
I'm saying.
The issue that 99% of Islamics... I work with women. I work very closely with women. For instance, a Malaysian group, Sisters in Islam, which would not accept that Islamic scholarship says that the headscarf is an obligation. It's in fact a very, very modern imposition, which has been heavily promoted by the Muslim Brothers.
It's exactly the opposite.
Hold on, I'm going to pause us here. Would you like to just take this one person we haven't heard from?
Muazzin Beg, we haven't heard.
I'd just like to get this clear. Would you describe me as an ally in the war on terror?
No, I specifically mentioned that you weren't,
sure,
that you were actually a victim of it.
I feel a bit odd over here.
No.
I think we're veering off the point here a little bit, and that is your thesis is that the government is pandering to the Islamists by using groups like the MCB and the ISB. And let me tell you, in the wider Muslim world, or particularly sort of the activist Muslim world, where people perhaps are produced who commit acts of terrorism, actually see the MCB and the ISB, and even with all due respect, Tariq Ramadan, as people who are far too moderate. And let's remember, particularly because we're talking about Britain, we've been here before, historically speaking, in relation to terrorism in this country. The very person that, if you remember, even the BBC was not allowed to broadcast his voice, but only his image, quite ridiculously, was the very person that they ended up discussing with and making diplomatic agreements with in order to end the violence. Now, my question to you is this, is that if your thesis is the government can't even talk to these groups who are regarded by the militants as sellouts, then who do they talk to?
I have very little quarrel with your analysis. I do think that they are regarded by the extremists as moderates, and that's why I think that using them to corral the entire Muslim community into a ghetto of the mind and demanding their loyalty is not going to be the way. They're not going to be able to affect the extremists, and what they're going to do is affect all the fundamental freedoms of all of us. So
There goes the bell. I'm going to protect you from any further heckling. A bit of sanctuary for two more minutes, Geeta, to present the next point in your argument.
In this section, I want to argue that these groups aren't just fundamentalist in the sense that they want to promote an ultra-strict version of their religion. They promote the sort of hatred of others that can lead to violence. So in its native South Asia, the Jamaat-e-Islami has pushed for blasphemy and adultery laws, which have led to violence against poor and marginalized people. For example, the introduction of blasphemy law in Pakistan led to attacks on Christians and other minorities by mobs and by the authorities. Women in Pakistan, under the adultery laws inspired by the Jamaat, have been locked up for years simply on the basis of a flimsy accusation. In Bangladesh, the Jamaat-e-Islami was involved in supporting the Pakistani army in a genocide which raped women, killed thousands of people, hundreds of thousands, some would say, and created 10 million refugees. Those they attacked were the majority of the population, which supported secular nationalism rather than their own vision of an Islamic state. But it would be a mistake to think that these have imported their ideas fully formed from other parts of the world. For the diaspora in the UK, they have created an identity based on a sense of victimhood. But please note most carefully which Muslims are memorialized as victims. In every case, the struggles named are generally nationalist struggles which have become Islamicized. Palestine, Iraq, Chechnya, and Kashmir are some of the key cases. Darfur, where thousands of Muslims are being killed by other Muslims, is never mentioned. No tears are shed for its victims.
Okay, 2 minutes up. Hecklers, you can come back in again now.
Dawood Abdullah.
Yes. Are you aware that the Muslim Council of Britain organized an international conference on Islamic trade and finance in London in which the Chancellor of the Exchequer asserted that London, United Kingdom, is the gateway to Islamic finance in the world, and that the Muslim Council of Britain has facilitated opportunities for Islamic finance and trade between Europe and the Islamic world? Are you aware that the Muslim Council of Britain are sending chaplains into the prison systems where there are thousands of Muslims? Are you aware that we have put books into the school system to educate people on the correct principles of Islam?
It's precisely those kind
of
things.
Southeast Asia,
it's precisely those issues that are cause for concern. I do not want my children learning about Islam, which is part of my heritage too. I do not want the versions promoted by the Jamaat-e-Islami being taught to them. Nasir Ahmed.
Geeta, what you're saying about certain other countries, violence has existed, and I'm not denying that there isn't. But also, after 9/11, there were more than 7,000 attacks on Muslims here in the United Kingdom. There were mosques that were burnt down. What evidence do you have that Muslims in Britain have supported any of this violence elsewhere? Because you're talking about Darfur, and I take great exception being a panelist here. I used to go to Sudan. I have now stopped talking to the Sudanese government because of what is happening in Darfur. And whether it's Rwanda, or whether it's in Burma, or whether it's in anywhere else, for me, every human being is equal, and their rights are equal too.
Well, it's excellent news that you have at least stopped talking to the government of Sudan, but maybe you should be lobbying
now. I stopped long time ago when this all started.
Maybe you should be lobbying them very hard and loudly and talking to Muslim communities about what's going on there and what they can do to lobby and stop other atrocities. You quite rightly complained that Muslims have been attacked, mosques have been attacked and so on in the aftermath of 9/11. So Muslims are very quick, some Muslims, to, and you say you're not fostering a British victim identity. Every time we talk about accountability, the argument is shifted to where Muslims are victims. Yeah? It's absolutely not denied that Muslims in this country are having a very hard time.
But maybe you need to talk to Muslims too to find out how Muslims feel, rather than sitting outside and criticizing them from outside.
No. I'm not outside because I reject the argument that Muslims are a community apart.
Okay, next one.
Demina.
Geeta, I want to backtrack a little bit. I don't deny that members from Jamaat-e-Islam were there at the initial stages of the Young Muslims UK and the Islamic Society of Britain, but now we've moved on and you can't look at it as something that doesn't develop. And we're not drawing our reference points from the Indian subcontinent. Maulana Maududi, the founder of the Jamaat-e-Islam, I mean, I haven't read Maududi for about 15 years and I completely disagree with him in relation to women going into the private sphere and that being their domain. The Islamic Society of Britain and the Muslim Council of Britain do not coerce women into a private realm. Some of the key women do not wear the hijab in the Muslim Council of Britain, and that is not seen as an issue. The Young Muslims UK, we actually made a conscious decision about 20 years ago to split with the organisations that you're using to besmirch us with and, you know, make these connections of religious hatred and connections to terrorism and so on. I still haven't got the connection, Geeta.
Well, the connection is this. Your organizations may well have moved away. People think they move on, they reform. Tariq Ramadan is one such example who argues for various forms of reform. But I would put the question back at you. What have you done to show that what was done in the name of the Jamaat and the organizations that were involved? And what do you say about the ongoing atrocities committed by the Jamaat in Bangladesh?
I'd condemn any acts of injustice against anybody, whether they be Muslim or non-Muslim, Christian, Jew, whatever. If it's unjust, I utterly condemn it.
Tariq Ramadan.
Could I just ask you something? Because first, I really, I have a problem with the way you are presenting things, because once again, all the points you are making are just not true. What you said first about sisters in Islam in Malaysia, this is wrong. I went there, I gave a seminar for them, and they have not this position. They say it's up to you. You want to wear the headscarf, wear it. You don't want,
therefore
don't.
They say it's not a divine obligation. It's not
No. It's a divine. No, the problem is you are free to do whatever you want. This is the point. So don't change what they are saying. Second.
And what do you say to Saudi Arabia and Iran about that? Where have you lobbied the countries in which it's coerced?
This is the problem.
In which women do not have the choice. In Britain, they have that choice.
Okay.
They're free in Britain to make that choice. Okay. I can dress as I want, and Tahmina can dress as she wants. So, but in Saudi Arabia and Iran and many, many other countries, they're not.
Represent our points as
you
they
know,
are.
What are you doing
I said
about it?
When Iran said this is an obligation for all the women, said this is not Islamic, it's not the right way to do it. So please quote me right. Second, what you said about the Bangladeshi movement, please don't use the dictatorship's propaganda.
Which dictatorship are you
saying that everything which is happening there is coming from this Islamist radicalist because they don't want democracy. And you know this is the point in Pakistan, and you know this is the point in Bangladesh. So don't quote them,
in
not
Bangladesh,
saying who
they
it's coming.
They have democracy, and they're trying to defend it. And,
it's not by repeating that you are a secularist and atheist that prevents you from being, to promote intellectual property. One last point, which is really important. You said we are a diaspora. I'm not in a diaspora. I'm at home here. I'm at home in Europe. So the point you are making is that to put Islam outside Europe, and ISB, MCB are saying exactly the opposite of what you are saying. We are at home. We are British citizens, and we are not going to accept victim mentality. So you are nurturing a wrong perception
Why are you promoting? I'll take Moazambique and then I'll answer that.
Yeah, Geeta, I'd just like to return the issue to what it was about in the beginning, and that was the reason why we're having these sorts of debates nowadays is because of the violence that happened in this country. And the thesis, again, that you've said that the government is pandering the Islamists in this country by speaking to the MCB and the ISB. Now, an example...
Promoting them as main partners. Yeah. The government can and should speak to
anybody. Yeah, sure. And
in
I'm
fact,
not here to...
Hold on, let Moazambique finish point.
If you say you can't talk to these people, the government shouldn't be speaking to these people, and I'm not an advocate of them at all, then
I said it repeatedly that the governments need to talk to everybody. What they're doing is promoting them as the main partners and corralling any other voices, whether Muslim or other Asian voices or any other forms of organization.
Okay,
why is the
Hold
MCB...
On, hecklers, you are not able to heckle now. The bell has gone. You have got about 1:45 left now to make your final heckle-free part of your argument.
I want to know why the MCB... say that Ahmadis are not Muslims.
Geeta, I'm going to interrupt you. Who were the Ahmadis?
The Ahmadis are what could be called a heterodox Muslim sect. They self-define. As Tariq said, it's a matter of self-definition. Or somebody else, perhaps among the hecklers, said it's a matter of self-definition. They define themselves as being Muslims. The Jamaat-e-Islami and the Saudi Arabian government do not define them as Muslims. And in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, and possibly in some other countries, not in Bangladesh, where the Jamaat is fighting to get them declared non-Muslims. But in countries where they're declared non-Muslims, they are apostates. And if they use Muslim terms, worship as Muslims and so on, they are blasphemers. So they're threatened with arrest, they're murdered, and those murders are defended by MPs of the Jamaat-e-Islami. So when the MCB here, its constituent organizations like the East London Mosque invite inflammatory preachers to preach here, don't tell me that this is just a modernized British Islam that does not promote violence in the subcontinent.
Okay, well, you paused and the bell went.
Daoud Abdullah.
Yes, with regard to your question about why does the MCB not accept the Ahmadis as Muslims, it's very simple. It is not up to the individual to see what the criteria for Islam is or becoming a Muslim. A Muslim is one who accepts Allah, God, as one, and the finality of Prophet Muhammad. If you don't accept him as a final prophet, then you are not a Muslim. This is it.
Can I just say that, again, we have a precedent for this. If you go to, in Guantanamo Bay was the first time I ever had a discussion with a Mormon. And Mormons, I would say, are rejected by the majority of the people in the Christian world, by the Council of Churches. They do not accept them as Christians. And one of the reasons why is because they have the Book of Mormon in addition to the Bible, which they say is not a fundamental part of Christianity, and therefore they reject them as part of being the Christian community.
They reject them for their human rights violations. There are many, many very, very heterodox sects with very bizarre beliefs all across the Christian world who self-define as Christian.
Take another heckle. Tommy.
You defined fundamentalism at the beginning, and I would argue that Geatrix yourself, who's actually opened the gates of having that charge levelled against you as a secular fundamentalist, by trying to undermine voices that are not very loud, you know, voices, legitimate voices. You're actually trying to have your voice heard, but at the compromise of my voice. I think, speak clearly, let your voice be heard too. But I, just as I would not seek to stop you from speaking out, you shouldn't be trying to undermine my voice.
The voice of victimhood again. Whose voice am I undermining? I'm not representing very large groups. I'm representing a set of ideas. I don't have a voice with the British government. They don't invite me to breakfast to find out what to do about terrorism, nor am I saying that they necessarily should. I'm not saying they necessarily should. Nor am I saying that they shouldn't speak to you. What I am saying is that you do not represent all that British Muslims stand for.
You represent a particular
current.
Peter, we never said we did. We represent ourselves just as you represent yourself.
No, and, yes, but the current that you represent is something that, for instance, the Foreign Office has been foisting on people who are trying to organise arts festivals. They must talk to young Muslims. They must talk to the Islamic Foundation.
They talk to everybody. They must talk, I'm witness to that. They talk to everybody.
People running arts festivals are slightly surprised that organisations that have not very much to say about the arts are being foisted on them as the key people that they must talk to. There is a consistency.
Tariq. Yes, I think that no one is claiming to represent the Muslims. You know, you have a very important, you know, organization, MCB, it's really important, and it's coming from within the community. Like it or not, this is a reality. You are not part of it, but it's a reality.
As there's Hindu fascism within the Hindu community.
Okay, I don't think that the comparison is quite right, okay?
I think it's very apt.
I think that the problem here
I
is
think
really...
I think it's very apt, except that I'm prepared to stand up against the Hindu right when they murder Muslims, Geeta. And you are not prepared to stand up against Muslims when they're murdering Hindus, Muslims and Christians.
Okay, I think that first, maybe...
Tell me when you have done so.
Read the website of the MCB and you see the condemnations on our website.
Yes, I see the remarks on Hemedis.
Can you comment? Yes. You're making
yes, just one thing. I think that once again, you are just saying things that are totally wrong. You don't read. You don't read what we are saying. So there is one point here. And you can go to many websites just to have these kind of statements against what is done by Muslims, saying we have to be self-critical when Muslim Islam is a
There's
great religion.
There's general talk about self-criticism. I'm talking about what are the movements for accountability
you know,
within the Islamist movements. There are plenty of Bangladeshi movements and Pakistani movements for justice and accountability.
If you don't want to read and don't
they
want...
have observant Muslims and non-observant people and minorities in those movements.
Let Tariq make his point, please.
Yes, the problem is that you don't want to hear. It's not possible to listen to someone if you don't want to listen to what we are saying. So first, some people here are trying within organizations or on their own to try to do something to build a constructive and a better future. You don't like it or not, it is a reality. Now, you are saying they are very dangerous. And what you are building out of this is just connections that you are creating. We don't know from where. We don't know why. We don't, and speaking about diaspora, they are coming from outside. You are spreading fears out of nothing. And you are dangerous because you are not building the future.
Well, it's a great honor to be called dangerous by Tariq Ramadan. Thank you for that.
It's not an answer, please. Can you answer?
The organizations that are set up, they may have moved in different directions, but they acknowledge their sources
can
in
you,
Maulana
please,
Maududis
can you, I have
and
a
in
very
Hassan
al-Janna's
organizations,
question.
And they have never thoroughly broken from those forms of control.
Please, I have a very precise question. I want
saying things like 99% of scholars think this.
Just put the question one more time. Could you just quote now one statement done by one of these organizations which is, for you, in Britain, dangerous? One quote.
the quote from Muslim Council
of Britain.
I gave it to you. The quote from Muslim Council of Britain saying Ahmadis are not Muslims at a time when there are pogroms being conducted against them.
This is dangerous.
Because there are pogroms being... and the East London Mosque defending Dilwar Hussain Saeedi, who has had several arguments of hate speech.
So it's another name that many people won't recognize. Can you just explain who said
he is known in Bangladesh as a purveyor of hate against minorities of all kinds, whether Muslim minorities or others. But the East London Mosque is willing to defend him.
I understand that he's elected member.
Yes, he's a Jamaat-e-Islami MP.
I understand that he's an elected member of parliament in Bangladesh, and his party is in coalition government, democratically elected by the Bangladeshi people.
And the link here, of course,
absolutely,
is that the current Secretary General of the MCB worships at East London Mosque and has a role there.
Yes.
Okay, Mozambique.
Geeta, I'd just like to ask you a question, a sort of very practical question, in that, you know, you've said what you've said about the representation abilities of some of these groups, and perhaps I agree with you in that they're not representative completely, but for a different reason. But what would you offer as a solution? So surely, if you're saying that the other voices aren't being heard, the other sort of more moderate mainstream Muslim voices aren't being heard, if the government is trying to tackle the issue of terrorism and violence, and these people are completely separated and dislocated from that, then who do they need to be talking to, is the question.
They need to be talking to everybody. I mean,
To the Catholics? Who do they need to be talking to?
Why do people have to be corralled into religious communities? That's one thing. People have many affiliations. Not all of them are religious.
Right, but my point,
That social policy...
But you're answering my question with a question. I want it answered with an answer. What I'm asking you again is that who should they be talking to? Okay, the MCB is this umbrella organization. My thesis is this, just like in any aspect of war, is that the very people that you need to speak to are the ones that you claim that you won't speak to them. And in the end, if you want peace, you will have to speak to those people. That's been the historical truth of what happened in this country with the IRA. That would have happened had they opened dialogues with people in Algeria or even Palestine and elsewhere. This idea of not wanting to talk, it's also what Osama bin Laden says, because he says that if they don't want to talk to us, then we will speak to them in language that doesn't use words.
Can I just clarify something?
But everybody keeps saying, don't want to talk, and I'm not talking about talking.
Can I just clarify something with you, Mozem? Are you saying that you think, Mozem, that the British government should talk to the fundamentalists themselves rather than the MCB, who, as you said earlier, are regarded as something of a sellout?
Again, you know, if we remember back in history, it wasn't too long ago, Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness from
the
Sinn Féin.
Yes.
So the answer, yes, of course, they were talking to the political wings who weren't involved in any of the violence.
So who would you, Mozambique, who would you say the British government from that fundamental...
I think they need to be speaking to those very people that they've been locked, that they've locked up, and they want to send over to Algeria, people like Abu Qatada and other people who have got influence on the Islamists, on the people that they're worried about can cause
problems. They shouldn't lock them up, they should be talking to them.
They should be able to speak to them, of course they should.
But they've spoken to them for years. It was very clear that the security services have been speaking to them.
And what have they done? What have these people supposed to have done?
Can I correct you that after 7/7, the government spoke to well over 100 people from almost every section of the Muslim community?
No, actually, most of them were from groups connected with the Jamaat-e-Islami and the Muslim
absolute
Brotherhood.
You see, this is why I take exception to your, because your information is wrong.
I was leading
one of those groups, and we don't need atheists telling us what to do for the Muslim community.
I'm not telling you what to do, but I foresee problems, because I know that there were exercises conducted, and certainly secular women of Muslim descent were not part of those exercises quite often, because they didn't want to be, because they don't work only as Muslim.
One of the groups that came out, I consulted from Scotland to Wales throughout the United Kingdom.
You weren't in the women's
organization. I consulted with 125 women's organizations and invited each one of those organizations to take part in the consultation.
And I'm sorry, I don't actually know what the sources of this.
I'm sorry, Geeta. I have to be very polite. You're wrong.
Muslim organizing. There was rage against the MCB.
Okay. Right. Well, some pretty fiery heckling has been going on.
By women.
As we've heard. Hold on, Geeta, because now is the time for the audience who have sat so patiently for so long and without much freelance heckling, I'm very glad to say. Now you can make your point if you just put your hand up, wait for the microphone. Who would like to make a brief comment? So the gentleman there with the black T-shirt. Just say who you are and where you're from.
Hi, my name is Sadiq Hamid. I'm a doctoral researcher at University of Chester, specialising in Muslim organisations in the UK. I'm really disappointed, Geeta. I thought you'd do your homework. You have no idea about the nuances and the differences between Islamic organisations. Grouping all these organisations together as Islamists who are supporting terrorism and who are indirectly dangerous and so on, you just haven't got your facts right at all, which has been demonstrated again and again during your argument. You're incoherent. Your facts, I mean, there are no facts in your argument. Your thesis is flawed. I mean, just the other day, for example, you say that the Muslim Council of Britain is the only organisation that the government's talking to. Well, no, yeah, you're saying, well, that's your main thesis, isn't it? That's the core of your argument.
It's promoting it.
Okay,
well,
okay.
The Sufi Muslim Council has been represented, and it's being talked to by the government. The FCO had a conference in Turkey 2 weeks ago when they invited a spectrum of the Muslim organisations in Britain. So you're obviously out of touch. That's your problem.
All right. Now, I wanted to find a point. Is there anybody here who thinks that Geeta's actually got a point? Yes. Yes. Gentleman just down here.
Jeremy Phillips, representing MCCR, Equity and the TUC, represent people of all colour, creed and race. The only thing that counts is aptitude and talent. Every creature that that lives in the sky, every creature that swims in the sea, every creature that lives on the land always protects their young for the future of their species. Can you please tell me why the aged activists sacrifice their young and urge them to die when they should be doing it themselves?
Hi, Simon Morali. I don't represent anyone, but I'm a British Muslim, and Geeta, what I'd like to say to you is I haven't heard about British Muslims today. I came to this debate expecting to hear about that, and with regard to all your references, they're all from the Indian subcontinent. We are trying to shape Islam in the West. We're actually living here. We don't take our references from the Indian subcontinent anymore, and I think you're out of touch. I think if anything, you're actually debating the wrong country with the wrong people.
Colman Aldridge from Muslim Public Affairs Committee, MPAC, and I'm a student as well. Just reality check for Geeta that we are actually in Manchester, which is in the United Kingdom and not actually in South Asia. And the points that you're trying to make and the references that you're trying to draw with the South Asian countries is that, you know, they face, their situations are entirely different. Apart from the multidimensional poverty issues that they face, their third world country status, the context is completely wrong for you to be making any comparisons. And yet you're stuck in this time warp in a different place, which isn't relevant to Muslims in this country. The second point is, I think Tamina was being kind when she called you a secular fundamentalist, because I think you're an uninformed secular extremist who wants to impose your agenda. You don't want the NCB to be teaching your kids about Islam or, you know, the Hindu fundamentalists about religion. But I would not think that any child who came under your influence would learn anything much about anything.
Ismail Mamoniak from Bolton. I'm a member of ISB. I'm going to make some statements here which I don't actually want your forgiveness for. I think you're completely extreme for a secularist. I've never heard such claptrap. From the point of view of what you're actually accusing people of is that they can't actually change. People who may have been connected to Jamaati Islamia, who've set up organisations and actually completely divorced themselves from that, you're actually saying that they're still connected to those. You actually then, by inference, are attacking the ANC, but from the point of view of people who can change and wish to change, you've actually attacked them seriously, and I think the connections that you've made are absolutely ridiculous.
Hi, my name is Shugufta Khan. I'm a British Muslim, and I just think, Geeta, that your impression of what Asian Muslim females in this country is diabolical. Most Muslim women that convert in this country, we have more freedom, we have our choice. We don't have to be told what to do and when to do it. Islam doesn't teach us that. And you are basing your argument on culture rather than Islam. And you should look at that first.
My name is Shabir, I'm from Blackburn. I sort of agree to the point that the government does not work with organisations who really represent Muslim Muslims. I'm a youngster, and I think there's about 500,000 similar Muslims like me. And I've come across an organisation called the Muslim Public Affairs Committee who are trying to do that. But I still don't understand your point. What is the solution? Because you've said all this, but you still haven't said what the government should do.
OK, I'm going to ring my bell. That's the end of the audience session. It means, Geeta, you've got a short time to sum up your argument. You've come in for some very stinging criticism, both obviously from the hecklers, but also from the audience tonight. You've got a few moments to respond.
Isn't it depressing that the people who say that we are British and we are not interested in the subcontinent are not prepared to acknowledge not only that there are atrocities being committed in the subcontinent in the name of Islam, but that the people who have supported those atrocities are coming here at the invitation of the groups that I'm talking about, and that they don't need to be held to account. I think that makes my point. But I'd say that mainly what I'm talking about is democracy. And that is what is absent from this discussion, because it's not a question. I'm not saying that any one person represents Muslims, or any one person should be seen to, or that this representative is the true representative and that one isn't. That is not my argument. The Sufi Muslim Council was, I've spoken to the people setting it up. They set it up precisely because they were fed up of seeing, of the MCB being seen as the main representatives. And this is an interdependent world that we live in, and the roots of terrorism run wide and deep. To deal with one set of terrorists, the government has brought on board older, more organized networks of fundamentalists. But they will not succeed in their appointed task of disciplining the pious and keeping British Muslims under control. Battles over textual interpretations are not the answer, and I don't think that they're going to convince the disaffected young men that you talked about, Muazzam. The point in the end is not to control, but democratize. To struggle for the freedom of the critical imagination, to engage in debate about what are the values to which we can all subscribe. There is no answer to the defense of democracy, but more democracy. The struggle against violence and for a just rule of law must begin in the most intimate spaces of the family, the community, and in the institutions of the state. These are questions that engage every British citizen, not only Muslims. And it is for the government to create the conditions in which that debate can take place without hectoring and without justifying torture and arbitrary detention. And finally, without forcing the whole of Britain to become as sectarian and divided as Northern Ireland was, a set of little communities, each in their fundamentalist ghetto. The struggle for secularism is one for believers too. As a woman called Aisha said many years ago, I'll be answerable to God, but not to the mullahs of this world. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the final bell has tolled. A fascinating and, I have to say, lively way to explore a hugely important issue, I hope you agree. So thank you to everyone who's contributed. But for now, from Geeta Sehgal, from our hecklers, from our audience here in Manchester, and from me, goodbye.
Tonight's edition of Hecklers was chaired by Mark Easton. The main speaker was Geeta Sehgal. She was opposed by Daud Abdullah, Professor Tariq Ramadan, Muazzam Beg, Tamina Salim, and Lord Ahmed of Rotherham. The producer was Innes Bowen. Next week, a Ugandan journalist argues that aid and debt relief are doing more harm.
To struggle for the freedom of the critical imagination, to engage in debate about what are the values to which we can all subscribe. There is no answer to the defense of democracy, but more democracy. The struggle against violence and for a just rule of law must begin in the most intimate spaces of the family, the community, and in the institutions of the state. These are questions that engage every British citizen, not only Muslims. And it is for the government to create the conditions in which that debate can take place without hectoring and without justifying torture and arbitrary detention. And finally, without forcing the whole of Britain to become as sectarian and divided as Northern Ireland was, a set of little communities, each in their fundamentalist ghetto. The struggle for secularism is one for believers too. As a woman called Aisha said many years ago, I'll be answerable to God, but not to the mullahs of this world. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the final bell has tolled. A fascinating and, I have to say, lively way to explore a hugely important issue, I hope you agree. So thank you to everyone who's contributed. But for now, from Geeta Sehgal, from our hecklers, from our audience here in Manchester, and from me, goodbye.
Tonight's edition of Hecklers was chaired by Mark Easton. The main speaker was Geeta Sehgal. She was opposed by Daud Abdullah, Professor Tariq Ramadan, Muazzam Beg, Tamina Salim, and Lord Ahmed of Rotherham. The producer was Innes Bowen. Next week, a Ugandan journalist argues that aid and debt relief are doing more harm...